When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Pirate Rugby. If you're new here, please consider subscribing and leaving us a review. We are very close to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube now. So if you could help us get there, it would be really appreciated. But without further ado, without wasting any more time, let me introduce this week's guest, and we have a special treat for you today. You may not know his face, but you will almost certainly know his voice. Rugby commentator and all-round legend Dave Rogers is with me. Hello, how are you, sir?
You can't have a pirate podcast without a Jolly Rogers. that just came to me and it sounded like a rope.
It's amazing.
It wasn't great, was it? This is fun, isn't it? I'm looking forward to having a chat. I'm very, very well, actually. The sun's shining for a change. I am in East London, so hopefully it's shining on you wherever you are. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It is reasonably shiny in the English Midlands, and I'm hoping that that shine will make its way to Gloucester later this evening, where I'm seeing a bit of European Rugby Cup action, but we'll talk a bit more about all that in due course. But
yes,
I like to research my guests. Unfortunately, you don't have a Wikipedia page, I can tell you.
No, absolutely not. And I think I'll refuse to forever.
But you do have a LinkedIn profile.
So oh, do I? Crikey. Well, I've not been on that for a while. So update me. Let me know.
So it says that you have commentated on 50 sports at an elite level.
Does it? Okay. Yeah, that's not far off yet.
Okay, so that's it. It says that you have an 11 handicap in golf.
Yes. Well, yeah, all right. Yeah.
It says that you're a terrible footballer.
Correct.
And it says that you're reluctant to do podcasts.
Does it really?
It does.
Well, and here we are.
Welcome to the Pirate Rugby Podcast.
What's the point of having a mind if you're not willing to change it, eh?
Well, there it goes. So just 50 elite sports, surely you can't name them all. So you've done the Olympics as well as rugby and things like that, haven't you?
Yeah. So there are different ways into commentary, and I'm sure the more commentators you meet, the more people will tell you the weird and wonderful way that they got in. My evolution was that I discovered I had the show off gene pretty early, and I like to be involved with microphones and live events. So I was a musician for a while. I sang, but I always loved sport, and so I became a stadium announcer, doing, well, not always stadiums, competitions, various sports, so doing friends favors, and that led to the Olympics London 2012, which was my first big gig at Earl's Court, doing the indoor volleyball, which was incredible. And so I've been lucky enough to do the last three Summer Olympics. So London and then Rio and then Japan. Talking about Paris, it's not signed on the dotted line yet, but I'd love to do a fourth in Paris. I mean, what a city, what an event. The stadium announcing became a little bit of presenting, became a little bit of something else. And even though I wanted to commentate on rugby, opportunities weren't particularly forthcoming, but I knew that I loved broadcast and live streaming and that dopamine hit of the whistle going and anything could happen. So if there was an opportunity to commentate on anything, I would give it a go. So there are sports in there that you will be familiar with. So all of the rugby codes, I've done sevens and 15s, I've done nines, I've done tens, I've done rugby league. All throughout. I mean, in the last few weeks alone, I've done full internationals and under 11 sevens at Roslyn Park. But there are some quite interesting ones in there as well. So goal ball isn't a sport that a lot of people are familiar with, but it's a sport for blind teams of three where there's a bell in the ball and you've got to be completely silent in the arena. So that makes commentary. It sounds a little bit more like this than my usual timbre.
Maybe you can get into snooker one day with that.
Well, do you know what? Snooker, I think, is the one sport where I wouldn't be able to do it because you've got to be such an expert in the game. So I can very rarely, I'd be like, oh, yeah, well, if you pot that red, you might be able to pot the black. But when you listen to the great snooker commentators, they're already planning the table clearance, aren't they? One of the weirdest ones. No, weird is the wrong word. One of the ones that was different to anything that I've ever done before was wheelchair ballroom dancing, the Para Dance Sport European Championships in Germany. That was, it was an amazing event with some astonishing athletes, but it is a lot different to Ospreys versus Scarlets at the Swansea.com arena, let me tell you.
I can't even picture that. I'm going to have to YouTube it later. I'm sure it's very fabulous and very elegant. It's just, that is unusual, as you said. So how does someone learn how to commentate? Is there schools? Is there TED Talks? Is there YouTube tutorials? How do you not go all the time? Because sometimes I listen back to myself podcasting and I cringe at how often I just go
In which case, I'll try not to do that during this conversation. It's quite difficult to explain. I mean, there are traditional methods. So historically, you'd get a job with somebody like the BBC. You'd express an interest in commentary. And as well as your regular day-to-day tasks, whatever they were, making tea, photocopying, a little bit of journalism, there might be an opportunity, or they would send you out to one of the regions and they kind of just throw you in at the deep end. I think now there are more vocational courses in colleges and universities, aren't there, where they'll try and give you a full journalistic toolkit to allow you to be a fully tooled up media droid and take on the world. There's three of them. But I think mine was more a case of becoming comfortable around the idea that you are live and you have a microphone and anything can happen. And as long as you're not intimidated by that, and as long as you're armed with enough knowledge about the laws of the sport that you're covering and the magnitude of the event or the fixture, then you're going to be all right. And I think because I always loved rugby and played rugby and was a fan of rugby, but my introduction to the world of sport was through volleyball, which wasn't a sport that I knew particularly well, I thought, right, well, if I can do that in a sport that I didn't grow up with, but you know, I learned to love it and I absolutely adore it now. It's rugby and volleyball are the two sports that I cover mostly. Then there's nothing to be scared of. Give it a go. You can commentate on this, and without wanting to sound like a big old capitalist, the market decides, doesn't it? If you're all right, you'll get a go. If you're not, you won't, and maybe in time you can improve and get that go. So here we are.
So I think a lot of people would assume with a commentator that you've got one big game on the Saturday or the Sunday and you build up for that and things. How many, let's just stick here to just rugby matches. How many rugby matches do you do in a normal week?
It's difficult to say this without sounding like a bit of a prat, to be honest, but I'm pretty busy and I'm very lucky, but it does mean that I have to be very organized with my time, which is something that I'm not particularly good at. So this week, for example, I've got a Japan Rugby League One game very early Saturday morning. Then I've got a URC game Saturday evening. No, I'm telling you, porcupines. Let's do this Saturday, because I'm not doing any European rugby this Saturday. I'm going to visit my friends at the Bedford Blues, and I'm filling in for Sam Roberts.
The championship. Sam,
who's a good friend of ours, good friend of the podcast, and he is like, you cut him open, and he bleeds Bedford Blues. He loves that club and the club love him. So if he's not available, sometimes I'm lucky enough to go up there. And Goldington Road's a great place to experience rugby. So if you or any of your listeners have a Saturday where you're looking to go to a new ground, go visit the guys at Goldington Road. Massive derby against Ampt Hill as well. So I'm excited to be involved with that. Saturday morning, I'll be up and I am doing Blue Revs versus Spears in Japan Rugby League One. Then I'm heading slightly north for me to do Bedford Blues. Then I've got another game on Sunday. Massive day for me on Wednesday, because it is the Bucks Super Rugby and Women's National League finals at the Stonex.
Oh, yeah. Then I know you're a big fan of that.
Oh, I love it. I adore it. To be fair, I adore all the leagues that I cover, but that one's got a special place. Then on Thursday, I've got an Indigo Premiership game in Ebbw Vale. And then on Saturday, I've got a URC game. So that is a particularly busy week. There are a few other things happening there as well, because it's the Quad Nations Championship, which is a warm-up for the Paralympic wheelchair rugby. So top four teams in the world. We've got USA, Canada, Great Britain, Japan. Three of those teams will probably be medalists in Paris. They're playing in Cardiff, so I'm doing that on the Tuesday. And I've got a couple of games of volleyball as well, because it's coming into the final throws of the Italian Serie A in both the men's and the women's. So we're into the semi-finals of the playoffs. So when I say it all out loud like that, it does sound quite busy, actually. So on a particularly packed week like that, a lot of time will be spent dedicated to the research, making sure that I've got all my preparation right. And then there's a nice mixture between being on site in the ground, pressing the flesh and calling it up close. And for the volleyball and for some of the rugby, including the Japan Rugby League One, frustratingly, they don't fly us out for every game. So I do it from the very position I'm talking to you in now, with this headset on at this standing desk and an incredibly smart piece of software sends me the pictures of the game. I commentate on them. My co-commentator, I'll be looking at them like I'm looking at you now, a little picture in picture. We call the game from wherever we are in the world. It's quite amazing, really.
Wow. That does sound absolutely packed.
Yeah, so, it is. I've just said it all out loud. I'm like, oh my God, so much work.
So with the prep, you know, I remember seeing a clip about Bill McLaren, the legendary commentator, and he would use playing cards to memorize players' names.
Okay.
And he'd write their name on the playing card. So how do you have a way like that? Do you have a specific crib sheet? Is there like a standard commentator's way, or do you have like, what's your research and preparation look like?
I think everybody's got different ways of doing things that make them feel comfortable, but they all boil down to the same thing, which is give yourself what you need on the day to do the best job that you can. So Nick Mullins very often puts his on social media, doesn't he? And he's got beautiful handwriting and he does the colored pens with the bits of research and stuff like that. My team sheets, they look similar to that, in so much that it's got a big number and a big name and then a little bit of information about that player, the requisite information, date of birth, height, weight, number of tries they've scored, whether or not they've scored in previous games against the opponents, perhaps something that's been going on in their life recently that you can entertain or educate the viewer with. But all of mine now is digital. So on the day, I'll make sure I've got backups on backups on backups. I'll have a printed copy. I'll have a copy on an iPad, just to make sure that no matter what goes right or wrong on the day, I'm still covered. I mean, a few times I really came unstuck early on. So I used to keep everything in a book. So I'd have all my commentary notes in order. So I actually started out as a football commentator more than a rugby commentator. And I worked at Leicester City the season that they got promoted from the Championship to the Premiership. And I had all my notes in a book. And I was like, right, so I can reference them back. And it looked really nice. It was a nice thing to keep, which was fine until I drove to work and I'd left it on the table at home, and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? So over the years, the more experience I've got, the more I've thought, well, if I do this digitally, I do it all on Google Sheets. So it's all on the cloud. I've got it there. So if my, I don't know, if my notes blow away, I can look at it on an iPad. If I drop my iPad, I can look at it on my laptop. If my laptop runs out of battery, I can look at it on my phone. So I have always got everything that I need to make sure that I can do the best job that I can.
Backups on backups. When I was at uni, we were marked on our logbooks. I did an engineering degree, and we started doing our notes in Google Sheets, and my tutor told me off, said, no, you need to be doing, engineers should have a physical notebook. And we were all saying, but we could lose that. We could leave that at home. It could get water damaged, where if it's here, it's safer. And he was like, no, good engineer always carries a physical notebook. So I'm reading my questions for you today off a notebook. So maybe that's stuck in my head. Eventually.
A good friend of mine is a pilot, and he set up a company around making the process of applying for pilot's jobs a lot cleaner than it currently is. And one of the things that they are doing and are at the forefront of is digitizing pilot logs, because exactly the same for years and years and years, it's so important to log every minute of flying that you do. It might be hours, might be minutes, whatever, units of time. And they've been doing it by hand for years. Well, what if you lose that? So yeah. I think what they're actually doing is it's a digital format, but then it prints it out in order and people are still putting them in whatever they are, journals or anything like that. So I understand it. But right now, for example, so the Buck Super Rugby and the Women's National League finals, I'm going to be presenting the men's and commentating on the women's, and Joe Burns is going to be reporting on the women's, commentating on the men's. So I did the semi-final, I did Loughborough, they're going to have a very similar team, so we've got a great relationship, and I can just send in my notes and I can talk to them. And I'll be like, mate, great, here's an email with an attachment. I mean, it would be, well, I suppose it wouldn't be that difficult now to just snap a photo of something that you've done in pen, but it makes it a lot easier to share resources, to back it up, and for me then to have a personal reference point as well, like throughout the seasons. I think it's quite nice to have it all written down. And I think Nick Mullins look absolutely beautiful, but I've decided to try at least to bring it into the
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
21st century, and it's going all right. I'm nearly there. I've still got some little bits to refine, but I'm nearly there.
So there's quite a lot of camaraderie among commentators, is there? It's not like bastard, I wanted to do that game. Oh, he's got it again. He's rubbish.
I'm lucky that I've got a really good group of pals, and we're all of a similar success level, and we all try and help each other out. I'm sure there will have been times where I was just, you know, on the outside peeking over the fence, like, bloody hell, I wish you'd let me in, where I might have thought, oh, why is he bloody doing that? And perhaps if I wasn't where I was at, I might be a little more. But particularly with the way that rugby is now, and even though there are probably fewer big, shiny broadcast jobs where you can, you know, that are very glamorous and you can earn a boatload of money, there is more and more rugby being put out there, more and more platforms that it's being put out on, more and more games being live streamed. So there are opportunities there. And I think one of the reasons why I do it, and one of the reasons why I love the sport so much, is because in the main, there's a lot of really nice people, really interesting people, really helpful people who've got time for you, and they've got great stories and great experiences. Which again is perhaps one of the reasons why I've covered the 50 sports, and it's the rugby and the volleyball that have really drawn me in, because those are the two sports that have been full of fun, great, excellent people.
They say in professional musicians, the ones who are like the backing guys for someone like, I don't know, an Ozzy Osbourne or a someone like that, who is just in the band, they say like, how good you are at hanging out is as important as how good you are at your instrument, because they don't want to be with someone who's going to give them a headache for 6 days of the week.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But if you're going on tour, and I suppose that's another crossover between sport and music, isn't it? You want people who've got good energy, people who get it. And I think that is that's an absolutely massive thing. And, you know, very often those guys who are session players, the talent level that they've got is absolutely outstanding. I'm just trying to think of the name of a guy. I went to see John Mayer a couple of years ago, and he had a backing singer guitarist who did a singing solo, what is his name? It's not Robbie McIntosh. Robbie McIntosh was the grey-haired guy who played the slide guitar. He was absolutely outstanding. And he's got Pino Palladino, who's the famous bassist.
Yeah.
Who just literally stood at the back of the stage all night with his sunglasses on and his pink bass and his flat wound strings, just looking like the cool fellow Welshman, by the way, Pino Palladino. Oh, what have you got there?
This is my Fender Precision. Sorry, Robbie podcast, but this is my Fender Precision. If I was to turn the camera that way, you'd see my big stand of guitars and things. So that's my other hobby.
David Ryan Harris. Look him up. He is outstanding. But yeah, great vibes guy, immensely talented, just the kind of person you'd want on your team, because a really good egg and incredibly talented.
So I'm going to ask you, insert cheeky question here, do you ever have bets and go like, I bet you can't say this word, or I bet you can't?
So many times. More, less so these days, but back when I was doing a lot of live events. So sometimes if you do a multi-sport event, so I've done the Olympics and the Commonwealth Games, you've got a team. And again, it's all about being a team player, directors, producers, floor managers, camera operators, sound engineers, lighting engineers, big teams. And the days are really long. It's not like, I mean, rugby days are long for some people, particularly those who rig and set up the trucks. They can be there for sort of 12 or 14 hours, but everyone is in at the crack of dawn. You do a full day and then you leave at the end of the day. So I'll generally do a team sport like volleyball or handball for those. And at the Olympics, they're the ones that last the longest. So by day 8 or 9, when even though the sport's amazing, it's a little bit like Groundhog Day, because, you know, you go in, you have your breakfast, you do 2 games, there's a break, there's another 2 games, there's a break, there's another 2 games, and it's done. At the end, it's absolutely wild. So best case scenario is, Dave, can you try and say the word pterodactyl? Worst case scenario, because everyone knows that everything's going to run, I'll have my in-ear in, you know, the little headphones that they pop in you so they can communicate with you. Everyone's so sure that the show's going to go well, because it has gone well for the 20 games you've done before. They're just having a conversation while you're trying to have a conversation. So me and you are trying to conduct an interview about what's coming up. Or, you know, I might be chatting to a kid in the audience about, oh, is this your first time watching handball? What do you think of Paris? I'm subliminally saying Paris, so they give me a gig. And then, yeah, there's just somebody talking about, oh, do you think I should go to Mallorca or Dubai? And I'm like, I wish you would shut up, please, please. I can't concentrate. So, yeah, there are quite a few things like that happen. But please don't tell everyone.
Okay, I promise not to tell anybody other than everybody who watches and listens to this podcast.
Well, 1,000 subscribers, baby!
Come on, maybe by the time I put this out. No, let's not jinx it. So with the kind of setup, you're obviously like the lead guy and doing the most of the commentating, and then you've got your pundit who would work with you. And if we just keep it strictly to rugby for now.
Yeah.
Is that a bit of a divide? I mean, divide is the wrong word, it makes it sound negative. Is that a bit of a... There's commentators and there's pundits, and the pundits are normally ex-players who aren't maybe necessarily broadcasters by nature, let's say.
Yeah, I think so. Well, in fact, I know so really, and I think that's how it works. I don't think it's fair to not call them broadcasters, because really, none of us are broadcasters. You just, you know, you throw your hat in the ring. You think it's something that you can do. And by the grace and good faith of somebody, a producer or an exec or a director or whatever, they'll give you a go and you get the opportunity to do so. And some people can do it and some people can't. And those who can continue and those who don't end up doing something else. And I think sometimes with television and live streaming and platforms, a lot of people get into it thinking that they want to be a presenter or a commentator or a reporter, but really subconsciously they just want to be involved with the making of that. And I don't think it's until you get involved you realize how many incredibly cool jobs there are, like floor managing, like producing, like being a camera operator or a multi-camera director or any of these things that are such integral cogs. So for example, my wife is a producer and a series producer in comedy entertainment TV, and I speak to her about it all the time. For her, the idea of presenting is like, oh no, not for me. But the idea of not making television is terrible and unthinkable. Whereas for me, it's the fact that it's live and it's happening now that I get my buzz from. So, you know, her contracts might last 3, 6, 9 months where you're just aiming towards this one thing. Whereas my skill set doesn't work that way, and I'd be terrible at it. You know, the whistle goes, I start, the whistle goes again, I stop. So with regards to bringing X players in, I mean, why wouldn't you? You've got all these people who can guide them through giving all of their years and years of knowledge and experience to the viewer or the listener. It's absolutely amazing. And the beauty from my professional and personal perspective is that I love rugby. I love rugby. I love watching rugby. Don't love playing rugby anymore. Hurts too much. But I love watching rugby. I love learning about rugby. And well, this season alone, some of the people I've been able to share a broadcast with and just stand alongside, I've learned so much from people like Richie Rees and Sam Warburton and Flats and Austin Healy and Tom Shanklin and James Hook and Mark Jones. I mean, Mark Jones, who's the defence coach at Ospreys, yeah. Ospreys now, former Wales player, Mid Wales boy, actually, Bilth Wales.
Scarlet, like most people at the Ospreys.
Yeah, of course. Just hearing, he's incredible. All those guys are incredible. And the speed at which it goes from their brains to their mouths and they can sort of digest it and spew it out in a way that we can all understand it is truly amazing. So they, by having somebody like me who's just able to go play by play by play, name by name by name, phase by phase by phase, just allows them the time to see what's going on, and then as soon as they contribute they do. And I think that balance works beautifully.
Yeah, well, it feels like there's, maybe it's always feels like this and I'm just noticing it more now, there's a real fresh wave of people coming into the commentary box, and people like Sam Warburton who are so fresh out of it and are able to articulate the modern game in such a more in, well, I'm being maybe a bit unfair to some of the older guys, but in such an interesting way that's so insightful, because they can talk about the intricacies of modern, especially at test match level, things that weren't the case even 5 years ago, that the game has moved on so much. I think particularly as well, I've been watching the Women's Six Nations, and some of the women's pundits and presenters on that are absolutely sensational.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you a dark horse to look out for in the future is Bryony Cleal. She was injured a couple of years ago, and I did a few Premier 15s, as it was then, games with her, and they were her first ever games, and her natural charisma and her ability to express that, particularly around areas of the set piece, the scrum and the line out, just quietly in my head, I thought, you are going to go places. She was absolutely phenomenal. One of the best I've worked with across all sports. Absolutely outstanding.
Oh, fantastic. I'll definitely keep an eye out for her. So when you say you've got a really big game, whether it's for TNT or ITV or something like that, do you have like pre-production meetings with it and you'll go,
you know, I'm going to use the word narrative. You say this is the narrative leading into the game with this player or this team or this coach. And we want you during the match to be talking about it, to hit these narrative points. Does that happen? I'm sorry if that sounds a bit cynical, but is it that is there a level of pre-planning that goes into it and you get asked to focus on certain things?
I don't get asked to focus on certain things because I think once the game is underway, the most important thing is to call the game straight down the line and don't allow any pre-biases that you may have to cloud what comes out of your mouth as the game is happening. And that's something that I really try not to do. You know, if something happens, call it as it is. So I used to train audio describers for blind and visually impaired commentary for football clubs, because that was how I sort of cut my teeth as a commentator. And because you're working for a football club, the most difficult thing to do is to encourage the commentators not to be biased. So if everyone, well, say you're a radio commentator or you're an audio describer, nobody who's listening to you can see what's going on because they're blind or they're visually impaired. So if you are biased, again, I'll use Leicester City as an example. I don't support Leicester, but I did a lot of commentary for them. So if I describe what's going on through a Leicester City prism, and then at the end of the season, Leicester City finish 18th in the league, but I've said, oh, Leicester were robbed, Leicester should have had a penalty, that goal should have been disallowed, then all of the supporters who've listened to my commentary are going to think, oh, well, we're the best team in the league. We've been hard done by. How did we finish 18th? How did we get relegated? Whereas if you are honest and if you've got integrity and if you give the viewers the straight down the line opinion, then they can come to their own conclusions, can't they? So in terms of those narrative points, I mean, I think that TNT in particular do a really good job of looking at maybe what the rivalry is, maybe at looking what who the star of the show is. So I know before Northampton Saints last 16 victory the other day, they sent Laura Jane Jones out and she did a really good piece with Finn Smith, for example. So you can build a narrative around Finn Smith in the build-up in the hope that he has an absolute stormer. You are vindicated in your decision to do that, and then you can reference it post-match as well. But in terms of building a narrative to suit the play that happens in the 80 minutes, then no, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And it's really interesting because I think fans are, and I include myself, all fans are like this in every sport. It's not just rugby fans. It's not just a particular set. Are all very, can be very tinfoil hatty. And when it comes to a lot of things, a lot of time, and there's a conspiracy against us and things, and the commentator hates us and stuff like that.
No commentator hates any team. If we hated rugby or rugby teams, then we wouldn't do what we do. We do it because we love rugby.
Yeah. So
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Speaking of, kind of on that topic then, so rugby at the moment is more and more going behind paywalls. We've seen that the Autumn Internationals has gone to TNT, which seems to be positioning itself as the rugby broadcaster for the UK. And what's your kind of thoughts on that? The Premiership has currently got one game a month or a week on ITV. We've seen Rugby Pass TV is starting to broadcast more, which is free, but it's only for games that don't already have a paid broadcaster in the UK. Do you think that going to a subscription model for particularly club rugby is the right move, or do you think that free to air, you know, some people will die on the hill that it should always be free to air, it's a national right along those lines?
I think it's really, really difficult. I think it's really, really difficult in a sport that is struggling financially to find ways to generate revenue, and a way to generate revenue is by negotiating a good deal for your broadcast rights. And we've seen the difference that has made in France to French rugby. They have got two incredibly competitive professional men's divisions, and I've just come off the back of the men's and women's under 18 Six Nations. Their men's team lost to Georgia, which is absolutely bonkers and brilliant for Georgian rugby and brilliant for the global rugby game. But, you know, if you watch that game back 70 minutes in under 18s, it's a game that France should have put to bed in the first half, didn't, and then came unstuck. A lot like the men's team against Italy in the senior Six Nations. But in the women's under 18s Six Nations, the French team were outstanding, and their core skills were as good as anything I've ever seen at that age group. So what they've been able to do there with the money that has come from the broadcast deal has paid dividends and may continue to pay dividends for a long, long time until other countries are able to replicate whatever they're doing there. In terms of rugby as a free-to-air product, I just want as many people watching the game as possible. And I know that there are various divisions who are making an effort to do that. So Premiership Women's Rugby is behind a paywall at the moment on TNT, but clubs are being encouraged to live stream their non-TX games. So I know that Harlequins, anytime they're not on TNT, if they're playing at the Stoop, then they've put their hands in their pocket to fund the live stream. I know that Saracens have done the same. I don't think for all their games, but certainly for some of their games. And I know that Paul Morgan and Belinda Moore are looking at ways to supplement the paywall by putting on some live streams on the PWR YouTube. They did it for the for the Ealing Trailfinders game when they did the Superpower Weekend, and then the Saracens game the following day as well. There is lots of great rugby that is free to air. So in Wales on a Thursday night, hipster rugby, you've got the Indigo Premiership. So they do one round a week. It's Welsh language studio, but there's English language commentary available. Bucks Super Rugby on a Wednesday as well. They're putting out as many games as they can, but again, it is budgetary. Even to put on a live stream costs money. So I would absolutely love to say, do you know what, BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5, stick it on for nothing and get as many eyeballs, but there needs to be a compromise somewhere. So, you know, like Premier League football, Premiership football, the top level of football since it went from Division One has never, ever, ever, ever been free to air. And Sky Sports were able to build a behemoth off the back of it. Now, I think there needs to be the acceptance, and there's a reluctance among rugby fans to admit that football is a bigger deal than rugby. It just definitely is. Like it just is. And that at some point, if you want to watch rugby, you are going to have to pay for it, because it's a professional sport now. Players need playing, staff need paying, coaches and medics and all of these people need paying. So whether it's putting your hand in your pocket to buy a ticket or a subscription, then at some point it's going to cost you something. I think where people start to get a little bit catchy is if all of a sudden you're buying a subscription to TNT and Sky Sports and Viaplay and Rugby Pass and whatever else is the next thing along that's trying to get that extra 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 pounds, euros, dollars, whatever currency it is. I think that's where the frustration builds. Personally, I think in terms of Premiership rugby, I think TNT are doing a very good job, and I'm quite interested to see how that evolves over the next couple of years and how it changes from the BT Sport days. I would love for the Six Nations in particular and the Rugby World Cup, men's and women's, to remain free to air. Personally, that's quite important to me.
I can see that. I think a lot of people would agree with that. Yeah, my colleague and co-presenter Ender does a thing on Twitter called the Rugby Broadcast TV Guide, where it says if you want to watch this game, it is on this channel at this time. And things with the Challenge Cup, you absolutely need it because it's almost impossible to keep on top of where everything is.
Well, the Challenge Cup changes year on year. So I did a couple of Challenge Cup games a few seasons ago, and I did them remotely from where I'm talking to you from now. And they tried to put them out on the ECPR website, and now thankfully they've got a broadcast deal, so you know the quality of the camera work and the studio offering and everything improves. But because it runs concurrently with the Champions Cup, but the format is different, it is difficult to follow.
Definitely, and there's now so many teams in both the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup that for us, you know, our thing on the Pirate Rugby is we try to cover all the rugby all the time. And it just becomes unmanageable. It just becomes.
I get it to the point where, and you know, I'll admit this, there are some games that I cover where I'm not always sure the platforms that they're going out on.
Really?
Particularly with the commentary stuff. So I know that the Japan Rugby League One stuff, Rugby Pass are taking it now, TVNZ are taking it, and ESPN Africa are taking it. But there could be some more channels taking it because it's a world feed commentary. It's available for any territory to purchase. But I haven't got the full list, which I know sounds bonkers. But yes, it's a great global sport with so many brilliant players and stories and leagues to follow. And thankfully, you're on top of where to follow them.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about a league you just mentioned there, the Japanese League One. So that's something that you've been getting up very early in the morning to watch.
Yes.
It is something that we have only just been able to catch some live games thanks to Rugby Pass TV. I think there's a lot of preconceptions about it because whenever you see clips on social media, it's always of someone like Lou Diega or Ardy Surveyor or something scoring a hat trick in a game from 50 meters out. Yeah. And it creates the impression that, oh, like, quote unquote, proper players go over there and tear up. And then, you know, the standard isn't quite there. That's not my impression, having actually watched the games.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, like, your impression of the Japanese league, how it's evolved, and give people a bit of an intro to it?
Have you ever been to Japan?
I haven't, sadly.
Please do. One day, whether it's business or pleasure, because it's an absolutely amazing place. I love it. I love the league. I love their attitude to sport. I largely love their attitude to life as well. What do I think of the league? I think it is incredibly entertaining rugby. I think they've found a format that allows them to be true and fair to their local players and talent and supporters, whilst at the same time providing opportunities for world-class players to experience their culture, but also enrich and improve their rugby and make it more of a spectacle. To give you an idea of that, the players are cut up into three categories. You've got a category A, which is a Japanese eligible international. You've got a category B, which is a foreigner who hasn't been capped for their country, who could potentially be capped for Japan in the future. And you've got a category C, who is, you know, your rock stars, your Lou Diagas, your Cheslin Colbys, your Peter Steph Detoys, Ardy Surveyors, Aaron Smuts, etc. So 80% of your squad has to be category A's. You're allowed, in your entire squad of 40, 50 odd or whatever, you're allowed up to 9 foreigners, but you're allowed no more than 3 category C's. That's usually what squads do. They'll have 6 category B's and three category Cs. Your category Bs are very often lock forwards and outside halves. Same with your category Cs, really, because there aren't many, you know, 6 foot six, 6 foot seven, 6 foot eight Japanese guys. Yeah. But in terms of the other positions, props, hookers, back rowers, scrum halves, centers, wingers, the talent is great. They pride themselves on their fitness. So the co-commentators that I've worked with, Shane Williams and Tinus Delport, both absolutely brilliant, but of course both have played out there, and they're like, one of the main differences is their fitness, mate. When we went out there to play, never done so much running. We had to lose kgs because it's just relentless. In terms of the style of play, hardly any box kicks. Yes, they'll catch and drive from the line out 5-10 meters out, but if it doesn't go over maul wise first phase, they'll go edge to edge. There's none of this Exeter Chiefs pick and go, pick and go, pick and go, wait for the advantage, pick and go, try. They just play off the cuff. It is loose. It is fun. It is high skill level. It's not as physical as a South African team in the URC or one of the top 14 teams. But in terms of an 80 minutes of rugby where you've got two teams who are going to try and score tries, who are going to entertain a crowd, and the crowds are amazing, by the way. They're getting 25,000-30,000 at these games every Saturday in the top division. And in terms of a development tool where they are playing true to a style of rugby that the national team will then go on to play, I think the league is brilliant.
That is definitely one of my takeaways from when I watched Steel versus Sun Goliath the other day. I did think, oh, this is like watching the Japanese national side. They run a lot of the same shapes. So someone like Bryn Gatland then is category B then, not Cat C.
He's not Cat C, which means without wanting to sound cynical, he's a little bit cheaper. I'm sure he'll be on a good wedge. He's had an outstanding season, by the way. He's been absolutely brilliant. He's up over 150 points now. I think he's averaging around 13 a game when he's been against her. He tucked Bowden Barrett in earlier in the season as well, completely outplayed him. And he's been one of the signings of the season, actually.
One of my favourite, probably my ultimate favourite Japanese player at the moment is Matsuda, the fly half for Wild Knights.
Yes.
What a team they are. 12 from 12 at the top of the standings.
Yep. Scored over 400 points in those. Scored over 600 points. Their points difference is over 400 points as well. They are going to take some beating. I mean, look, it's like the Premiership or like the URC. It is a playoff. It's the top four will go through. At the moment, I think it's Sun Goliath, Cannon Eagles, Brave Lupus. Lupus is Wolf, yes. And the Wild Knights and playoff rugby does weird things to people. But yeah, Wild Knights are very, very good.
Yeah, Bristol Bears will tell you all about playoff rugby.
Oh, right. Yes.
So fun question before we move on to the next category of the show. I want to know the best commentary box that you've ever sat in and the worst one, the one that you were like, why am I in this garden shed?
The best as in
the most plush, the poshest one, the one where you're like, oh, this is nice.
Okay. I mean, there are a couple for sentimental reasons that are amazing. So even though it's not the most luxurious, the Principality was pretty special to commentate there. And also I did Melrose Sevens last year, which is where Bill McLaren did a lot of his commentaries from. So that was really historic. In terms of a vantage point where you're going tonight, Kingsholm is amazing because you're right up the top and you've got a panoramic view of everything.
That's not the one where you have to climb a ladder to get up there, is it?
There's quite a few where you've got to climb a ladder to get up there. That one is, no, it's a staircase, actually. You've got to go back into the stand and up a staircase. There's a ladder at the stoop. At Sandy Park, there's a drawbridge. And so you've got to climb up this steel step drawbridge. And as soon as the game kicks off, then they pop the drawbridge up behind you. Yeah. So if
that can't be very fire regs.
Well, if you need a pee, you're in trouble. I'm not going to say the worst. Sorry, excuse me a sec. Always mute your mic to cough. It's courtesy. Where is the most plush? Where is the most plush? I'll tell you where is a tight squeeze is Parker Scarlett's.
Really?
To the point where last time we were there, it was a really busy one. So I was doing it for BBC Wales. So I had Kenneth Davis. I can't remember who was co-commentating with him. I was with James Hook for BBC Wales. Next to us was Viaplay, which is Martin Gillingham, Shane Williams, and Richard Hibbard. God, Gloucester are getting a lot of mentions, aren't they? With you going there tonight, King's Home and Hibbard. It was so tight that Richard Hibbard was sat on my lap. He's about 130 kgs.
There are times when I've watched, it must be the BBC feed I've watched, and I can hear Sean Holly, because he likes to shout a bit.
Yeah.
And I can hear him doing the Viaplay commentary on the BBC microphone.
Yes, yeah. So quite a tight squeeze there. I'm not going to say the worst, because I don't think it's fair. And anywhere you get to do it, like it's a privilege. It really is. But at Six Ways, RIP Worcester Warriors. So you've got the main stand, and then they've got the smaller stand with that sort of concaved roof. You climb up a ladder to that one, or you can go the long way round. But there's a potting shed with the front kicked off that's perched on top of the stand. And that's where you do the commentary from. And it was so sketchy. It was so sketchy. But it was, it was absolutely, absolutely awesome.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Right, fantastic. So, right, we're going to do a bit of a game now. Going to do something a bit fun. So I'm going to make sure that I don't get you in trouble, because I don't want to do that.
Oh,
I don't want to
cost you any trouble. I've got myself in enough trouble.
So yeah, I'm going to share my screen. So give me a shout when you can see it.
Okay. The moment I can see you. And oh, here we go. No, then I saw me. Oh, God, you are going to get me in trouble.
So this is ranking tier list. We love a tier list on the internet. It's a tier list of rugby competitions, rugby leagues, rugby cups. So
okay,
I've only picked 10 to be going on with. If anybody's wondering, where's Currie Cup Division 2? Where's Super Rugby South America? It's I've tried to tailor it to our wonderful guests today, so that we'll get someone else on in the future and we'll do some of the other broader ones, maybe a bit further afield. But so I've got 10 leagues to be talking about, and then I'm going to split them into five categories. The categories are this. So the top is best league. Now, I should tell you, Dave, that we are a very heavy URC propaganda podcast. So there is a right answer. There's a good time, no alcohol required, which some people may recognize from a well-known film review YouTube channel. Third category is not what it was. So maybe that's probably the meanest one. Then there's finding its feet, so maybe a newer tournament that's still on the up. And then there's hipsters only, so only if you are a hardcore, you are too cool to watch the big stars. You have to watch something that no one's ever heard of on a Wednesday or Thursday night. This is the league for you. There is, you don't have to have one
say,
in every
can I yeah, go can on. I just say, right, you've put hipsters only at the bottom there. Bearing in mind, I live in East London and you're wearing a flat cap. Like, what are you playing at here?
No, it's aimed, hipsters only is something that I would watch. If you'd like to If you'd like to classify hips as only as something that only Hugh could enjoy, that's completely fair.
The thing is, usually, like, hipster rugby, hipster football, hipster whatever, I like to think of it as something that is incredibly enjoyable, but only a select. So if it's hipsters only, I'd be like, right, well, this is the thing the hipsters are watching. I think you should watch it. It's outstanding. But anyway, let's go through these and see how much trouble and fun we can.
There's no rule to say that one has to be in each category. So everything can go in best league if we absolutely think we can convince ourselves of it. So first one, your specialist subject, your favorite one, Bucks Super Rugby. We'll combine men's and women's. This applies to both.
Oh, can you slide that?
I take it, cool.
We're doing this live. Yeah, nice. Mm-hmm. You can slide that up into best league, and let me tell you why. Bucks Super Rugby is the hinterland, the conduit, the silver lining between the glory days of amateur rugby and professional rugby that we love. It's probably the last opportunity that any player has to play for the club or the team that they have chosen to be a part of. You've got a short period of time, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, if you're on a longer course and you get selected as a fresher, and you have got that target, whatever that target is. So for Nottingham University, it's to get to the playoffs. For Exeter University, it's to win it three times in a row. For Bath University, it's to win it for the first time in the Bucks Super Rugby era. But those targets are there, and every Wednesday, it is so obvious how much it means to every player in Bucks Super Rugby and the Women's National League, which we're hoping, if a few little tweaks are made, will become Bucks Super Rugby Women in the next season or so. The talent pathway is absolutely incredible. I think come the British and Irish Lions Tour, we'll probably have our first BSR Lion in this.
Mm-hmm.
In this coming tour, in terms of the Six Nations, the only team in the men's who haven't capped a Bucks Super Rugby player are Ireland. But obviously they've got a lot going on over there. But France have, mm-hmm. Italy have, Scotland have, Wales have, and England have. And I think with all of the uncertainty around professional and semi-professional rugby at the moment, with fewer opportunities for players to go professional younger, for the relationships the professional and semi-professional clubs have got now with the academic institutions, and just the fact that as a young man or a young woman, you get to expand your horizons, your rugby horizons and your non-rugby horizons, I think Bucks Super Rugby is the best league. If I wasn't wearing this microphone, I'd drop it.
Oh, there you go then. So that's gone straight in there. Where shall we go next? Let's go for the one that we discussed earlier, Japanese League One. Where are you thinking?
Finding its feet, but only because I think it's an incredible platform. And I actually think in terms of a league, in terms of a format, as I explained earlier, it's found its feet. But now it is time that the global audience joined. So, as I said, TVNZ are on board, ESPN Africa are on board because of the All Blacks and the Springboks that are playing. At the moment, there's not particularly strong, there's no professional women's division in Japan. Mm-hmm. But I think as soon as the rest of the world catches up, then, Japan Rugby League One. Maybe hipsters only at the moment. But either way,
it is 5:30 in the morning. So that is quite hipstery.
Yeah, and hipsters can come straight in from the shed rave and tune in, can't they? All right, let's go hipsters only. But that is meant in the most complimentary of terms.
Yes. There's no losers here. Right. Next. Ooh, where should I go? Super Rugby. Right. So this is an interesting one. So it depends whether you want to say Super Rugby Pacific and sort of the post-lockdown Super Rugby is a new thing, or are we comparing it to Super 12?
Yeah, back we in are. The day? So you can we keep are. It in. You can keep it in not what it was, please.
I watched Moana Pacifica versus Reds this morning. It was not a good game. I will be honest.
I don't want to be disrespectful. respectful, but I also think this is a bad season for it as well, isn't it? Because we are entering into the next World Cup cycle, so a lot of the top Southern Hemisphere players will be exploring opportunities to play elsewhere. South African teams are involved in the URC now. Australian rugby is in a rebuild. They haven't had particularly positive press around the disciplinary decisions involving a few teams in the last couple of weeks, which I think is a very light way of putting it. That is not to say that there is an astonishing depth of talent in those teams and in those countries, but I think it is probably fair to say that Super Rugby is not what it was.
All of our South African listeners will be delighting at that, because they love to think that the Kiwis can't cope without them. And I'm sure they
won't. Shout out to the Saffers. Good guys.
Yeah. Right, let's go Championship Rugby next. So you were at Bedford before. I have to say that I'm backing Cov this year, and I know they're very close to each other in the league. Because I went to Cov Uni. Where I lived in first year was literally 3 minutes walk from the Butts. So I'm back in Cov this year. Ealing, I've lost something like three of the last seven games. Ealing. So it's not the walkover that it normally was. I think one of those is Premiership Cup, to be honest.
But, yeah, one was against Leicester Tigers. But Ealing Trailfinders, they always provide a team with the biggest moment of the season. Last year it was Coldy. This year it's London Scottish. So
yeah, I saw that.
So, yeah, they've got a hell of a thing going over at Ealing. But every now and then. Great league, good time, no alcohol required. There are some barriers to entry for rugby for a lot of people. A lot of them are financial. Mm-hmm. I am going to Bedford Blues this weekend. Tickets are, well, I say affordable, and I understand that that's a sliding scale. But it's not as expensive as going to see, I don't know, Saracens or Northampton Saints or Scarlets or Ospreys. They'll have about 3,000 there. There won't be a massive queue for the bar. The atmosphere will be good. You can get really close to the action. It's an historic club, and it's a league that's full of historic clubs like London Scottish and Coldy. I mean, what they've managed to do at Coldy is absolutely remarkable. It's not been without strife, of course. Jersey going bankrupt absolutely sucks, but it's a great league. It's full of talent. It's full of incredibly dedicated people. It's full of great stories. And if you went to watch a championship game, because unfortunately there's not a lot of broadcasting and live streaming around it at the moment, I think you'd really, really enjoy it. And the players that play in it thoroughly enjoy it. So good time. No alcohol required.
Fantastic. Right, next, let's go for a big gun, top 14. Well, so if you're talking glamour, for me, nothing beats the top 14 for glamour.
No, you are absolutely right. And I think there are some Premiership players who are going to the top 14 and Pro Day 2 next season. Some of them haven't been announced yet. And it's like, yeah, of course you're going there. And nobody does a home game quite like Racing, do they?
No, they like to stand out, definitely.
You can put that in good time, no alcohol required, because we have already decided what
we can
the
have
best
multiple best league. Leagues. We can have multiple best leagues.
Well, we could have multiple best leagues, but in this instance, we won't. Yeah, I mean, top 14 is just awesome, isn't it? And I will be very, like, come the end of this weekend, it'll be very interesting to see what the ceiling for some of the teams who are playing against top 14 teams is.
Can't wait. Let's go now. Well, speaking of this weekend, let's talk about the Champions Cup. So the Champions Cup got a lot of bad press this year and the last couple of years because of the constant changes of format. And some people don't like the South African teams being included. We're not amongst that on this podcast, but some people don't like it. But it seems as soon as we actually, you know, the whistles went and the games started being played, a lot of that negativity fell away. So what's your kind of view on it?
Well,
bearing in mind that you are a commentator on it, so you are, of course, have a vested interest.
yeah, and look, that is certainly a petard that I can be hoisted by, but I've been at how many Champions Cup games this year. So as a commentator, you
did two Cardiff games, didn't you?
I did the two. Well, I did three Cardiff games, but two at the Arms Park, and the atmospheres were absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing for Bath and Harlequins. Both sets of away supporters travelled in numbers. The home supporters really got behind the team. And look, Cardiff's struggles on and off the pitch in terms of the finances and being able to put and keep a squad together have been very, very public. But the crowd and the supporters have really got behind them. And they were amazing events. I've been to the Stoop this year for the Toulouse game, which was not a result that Harlequins would have been particularly pleased with, but the Glasgow Warriors game, I was there for that one on Friday as well, and it was absolutely awesome. So yeah, you can like have a moan, get it off your chest, but whistle to whistle, we have had some outstanding games of rugby, some truly brilliant games of rugby, and particularly those initial weekends, those pool phase weekends where you can plant yourself on your sofa in the pub, I don't know, at a ground, wherever you want, and watch three or four games of top draw rugby back to back. Doesn't get much better than that. So let's give it a good time, no alcohol required, please.
Let's go for it. Right, now let's go straight back down to the Welsh Premiership. So like you, I've been really getting into the Thursday night coverage. If you need your rugby fix, if you're an absolute rugby addict, there's something there for free for people to watch on YouTube if they want. There's a bit of drama and narrative to it as well now with all of the Neath-ness that's been going on online.
Have you been approached to do a Neath video?
I haven't. I'm not on Cameo though. So maybe
of course.
So what are we saying for the Welsh Prem then? Where's this going? Well, let me just interrupt you.
No, please.
But the fact that we're going to the EDC now, I think is maybe a suggestion that we should put it in not what it was, because it is becoming something else as of next year. Discuss.
Well, look, Ebbw Vale versus Pontypool on Thursday, is going to be absolutely massive. So I don't know what you're talking about. Well, no, I suppose next season we can put it in not what it was, but I feel as though not what it was is a bit of a, it is the downer here. Let's go hipsters only, in the hope that some of your listeners decide that they want to have a watch of it, because Ebbw Vale against Pontypool will be absolutely superb. I did Llandovery against Pontypool a couple of weeks ago and it was 50-odd, 30-odd in the end. Some of the tries that Llandovery scored were as good as you'll see anywhere. Like 22-22, three phases, 10, 15 pairs of hands touching the ball. It is good rugby. I think the gap between URC an Indigo Premiership is bigger than the gap between Gallagher Premiership and the RFU Championship.
And hopefully
with the changes, whatever they settle on, if they can close that gap so players are able to make the step up from Indigo Premiership into one of the regional teams because they're playing slightly higher standard of rugby every week, I think that would be a lot more helpful for the Welsh game.
I agree. Although I think what would be more helpful to the Welsh game is if the Scarlets would pick Charlie Titcomb.
Charlie Titcomb actually is, I've got him involved in a couple of commentaries. He's going to be doing the Buck Super Rugby final with Tom Lorday, and he's going to be doing England students against France students at Coventry in a couple of weeks' time. One of your favourite grounds. Hey, we love Charlie. I think he's a super talented 10. In terms of Scarlets, I think he kicks a lot more than Sam Costello and Johan. So at the moment, that's not fitting in with how they play. But I think he's great. Yeah. He's the hipster's choice. He's the hipster's choice at 10, big time.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. Right, let's talk about URC then. So, look, as I said, look, it's a foregone conclusion, biased podcast. But what's your favorite thing about the URC? What's the thing that you think, you know, it's got a lot of naysayers, particularly in Wales, but what's the one thing you would say to someone, look, it's brilliant for this?
Look, and again, I've got a vested interest here because I cover URC. One of the things I love about the URC is the fact that there are so many brilliant teams from so many culturally different rugby parts of the world who go toe-to-toe every week. One of the things that frustrates me about the URC is the fact that every now and then you can predict a result. And that's because of player welfare, and you can't just play every player every week until they can barely stand. So sometimes, particularly with the regions, when the WRU were controlling minutes, then a team would have to go away to Leinster or Bulls, and you'd think, oh no, this is going to be a tough one. And yeah, there are learnings from it, and players will improve as a result of being subjected to rugby at that level. But unfortunately, it wasn't a contest. Mm. When it is a contest, my God, what a league. What a brilliant league. Phenomenal. And some of the best players who play the game play in that league. And it's as simple as that. I think it's really exciting to see. And look, your South African supporters are gonna love this. It's really exciting to see South African teams doing so well. It's really exciting to see South African players with an opportunity to play in South Africa, because I do think that the Gallagher Premiership and, you know, some of the Welsh regions and, you know, even the top 14, if you took the South African players out of those leagues, then my goodness me, where would you be? Their talent pool is so deep. Do you know what? I wasn't going to do this, but I use one example. Personally, I think the Welsh national team would be much stronger if you picked Tom Bota at tight head prop.
Ooh, Ospreys fans will be loving that.
Well, but that's my opinion, because if I was putting a team together, I like a tight head who scrummages. I don't care if he puts his hands on his hips and walks to the next scrum. If he can win me scrum penalties or make sure that we don't concede scrum penalties, I'm happy with that.
I think there's a lot of people who'd agree.
But if you think where he would sit in the pecking order of South African tight heads, bearing in mind Wilco Lowe is one of the best I've ever seen with my own eyes, and he can't get a cap. That shows you how deep they are. So, you know, the fact that there are opportunities for Welsh and Scottish and Irish and Italian teams to be competitive with South African teams in the same division, like, what can you possibly be upset about for that?
I couldn't agree more. Let's do the PWR next, the Pro League, or the Premiership Women's Rugby League.
Good time. No alcohol required. It's not what it was, because it's improving. The Premier 15s was absolutely awesome. But Premiership Women's Rugby, a rebrand, it puts more power in the hands of the clubs. It puts more power in the hands of an independently led organisation. It's got a broadcast deal. If you watch it, it's the first time that women's club rugby has looked like it belongs on television, not in terms of what's happening between the white lines, because that quality has been there for absolutely years. But right now, if you tune in on a Saturday or a Sunday and you watch the game that is offered up by TNT, it looks and sounds amazing. They've got great people fronting it. They've got, you know, Sarah Elgin and Laura Jane Jones, who are recognizable, dedicated, talented sort of lead females. You've got Claire Thomas and Nick Heath, who are leading a lot of the commentaries, and Johnny Hammond has been involved as well. You know, people who've been sunk deep in the women's game for years. The Red Roses are arguably the best team on the planet, and we get to watch them every week. But we're also able to bring in talent from the best of the Welsh the best of the Welsh players, the best of the Irish. We've got some of the best of the South Africans. We did have some of the best Australians as well, but they've headed back to strengthen the club game there. I think it is unquestionably the best domestic women's division on the planet. Unfortunately, Buck Super Rugby in the Women's National League exists, so it's not in the best league category, but it is a good time and no alcohol required.
Yeah, well, none of the other leagues on this list have Cecilia Tupilotto playing it. So
correct.
I'm just saying.
She's awesome, by the way. What a human being. And a massive shout out to Dan Murphy and all the coaches at Gloucester Hartbury as well. Because when I first started watching Cecilia, I was like, oh my goodness me, who is this? And she was a ball carrying, Saturday ruining second rower back then. But they've worked with her and managed to turn her into a world-class front row. So huge credit to her for putting that work in, and huge shout out to those guys for helping her to do it as well. What a player, what a human.
Absolutely. And then last one, Premiership Rugby. So a lot of people would say that purely by the three clubs going bust, it's not what it was. Although I would say that actually concentrating the talent pool a bit has probably helped some of the standard, maybe. I don't know. What's your thought on it?
Bath are second, Saracens are third, Quins are fourth, Bristol are fifth, Exeter are sixth, Leicester are seventh, and Sale Sharks are eighth. How many teams is that? One, two, three, four, seven teams. Good maths. All seven of those teams have won eight and lost six this season.
Yep.
What a league. What a league. We're going. So there are four regular season games remaining. And realistically, eight of the 10 teams can still make the playoffs. And the team who are currently top could finish outside the top four. And the team who are sixth, I mean, mathematically, Sale Sharks could still finish top, but it would take a lot to go on. Mm. I think in terms, I don't think there is a more competitive league in rugby. Is there? If there is, tell me. I'll watch it every week.
I think from top to bottom, well, not quite bottom, but top to most of the way down, I don't think there's as much of a anyone can beat anyone league, no.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just... So even ninth place, so Gloucester, they've only got four victories this season, but outside of Premiership Rugby, in the Prem Cup and in the Challenge Cup, they've looked practically invincible. I mean, they're playing the Ospreys tonight. You've got to, are you in the shed?
I don't know where I am. Someone else has got my ticket.
Okay. Either way, it's a great place to watch rugby. I mean, Gloucester could quite conceivably win a trophy this year. Look, I'm a fan of promotion and relegation. Call me British. I think it's great, and maybe one day the Premiership goes back to that. But for the time being, what an immensely competitive league. Stick it in good time, no alcohol required.
Excellent.
Again, it is unlucky that Buck Super Rugby and the URC, by proxy, I hasten to add, exists, because the Prem is absolutely awesome. And look at some of the occasions as well. Like I again, full disclosure, I do a lot of stuff for Harlequins. I love Harlequins. But in a couple of weeks, they're hosting Northampton Saints at Twickenham. That's awesome. The big game this year, and now they do it as a doubleheader with the PWR team as well. Like there are clubs and Saracens going over to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as well. I mean, Leicester Tigers, they could probably sell out a stadium double the size. Bristol Bears at Ashton Gate. There are clubs that, despite the fact that the finances might not make as much sense as we'd like them to, are really bloody trying at the moment. And I think certainly on the pitch as well. The Prem is awesome. And looking at all these great leagues that we've had a chat about, there are a lot of haters, but I think it's important to realise that every player who runs out in those leagues is really bloody trying. And the vast majority of the people who are sat in the boardrooms and working in the club shops and pulling the pints behind the bar and making sure that the changing rooms are clean and that there's enough bandages in the medical supplies are really trying as well. So it's easy to be down on rugby, but I'm certainly not.
Well, fantastic. So there, for all our YouTube viewers, you can see the standings in front of you, but I'll just read them out for our audio listeners. In best league, we got Bucks and URC. Good time, no alcohol required. It's Championship, Top 14, Champions Cup, PWR, Premiership Rugby. Not what it was. The only one in there is Super Rugby. Nobody in Finding Its Feet. And then Hipsters Only is Japan League One and Welsh Premiership. What a set of competitions that is.
Yes.
So I think I should have stopped sharing now.
You have. Seen me.
Okay. So we mentioned finances there. So serious penultimate question. How does club rugby, not international rugby, how does club rugby prosper? Because at the moment it feels like international rugby, everyone is just putting all their eggs in that basket, and it is the only money generator in the game. And club rugby is being pushed and pushed and pushed aside in order to enable these international games, which are what is making the money. So how do we get out of that struggle?
God, you do realise that I'm just a bloke who shouts the names into a microphone, don't you? I mean, my goodness. If I sort out my own finances, then maybe I can sort out club rugby's finances. But look, you talk about international rugby there, like that's a gravy train. But beyond a certain number of countries, that's not the case either. So the Rugby Europe Championship this year was absolutely brilliant. Georgia won it again. Of course they did, but they were massive moments. Belgium getting the victory over Portugal, who ended up getting to the final again and coming up short, but playing some awesome rugby and blooding some new talent. Spain, they're really looking forward to hoping to qualify for the next Rugby World Cup. And they finished third in the end. But these are all really talented countries with really talented players. And you can put, you know, Romania in there, and Netherlands are growing, and Germany are growing, and they've got great coaches and some investment from World Rugby. But as unions, they're not making massive money. But I know the point you're making, like the home nations, the Six Nations. And if you pack out Murrayfield or Twickenham or the Principality or the Aviva, then hopefully you're going to be able to generate enough money, and it's going to trickle down, and it's going to help to grow the game. In terms of club rugby, it's really, really hard because there are so many competing factions for people's continually dwindling pots of personal cash. Even though it means that the, say, Gallagher Premiership clubs might not be as competitive in the Champions Cup, I like a salary cap. I know that that doesn't necessarily reflect as a business, and I know that some clubs have opted not even to spend up to the cap because trying to generate that kind of revenue just is a little bit beyond them at the moment. But what it does mean is you've got a baseline cost. This is how much it's going to cost for playing staff. This is how much it's going to cost to maintain our buildings, our stadium, our training facility or whatever, and you can work backwards from there. I don't think anybody who watches a good game of rugby regrets it. And I don't watch as much football as I used to, but there was a time where I watched a load of football. But if I'm honest with myself, I've probably watched a lot more bad games of football over the years than good games of football. And I don't think anybody really wants to have a conversation around that, because if you watch football, if you watch your team, then it almost doesn't matter, because you're going to get really happy or really sad about it either way, regardless of whether it's a great game or a bad game. It doesn't matter. If you lose a really good game, you're still going to be pissed off. If you lose a really good game, you're still going to be pissed off. If you win a really bad game, you're still going to be over the moon. I think in rugby, it needs to go a little bit beyond that, because you are not going to win every week. So it needs to be experiential. Yeah, you need to be frustrated if your team loses, but there still needs to be something there that makes you want to come back the next week or switch on the TV or watch online the next week. And I just don't know. I just don't know what that is, because the product is amazing. There's rugby somewhere for everybody. Like we said, the Premiership is so competitive. Japan Rugby League One is 100 mile an hour, like brilliant headless chaos. And I think anybody who is, you know, emotionally invested in it can see it. But how do you get people to become emotionally invested in it. And you've asked me how, and I genuinely don't know, because the product is there, the players are there, the athletes are there, the stories are there. They are all there. There are so many brilliant, brilliant people involved in men's and women's rugby. Great characters, great stories, great athletes. And I just don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it needs a cultural shift. I don't know if it needs a marketing shift. I don't know if it's money. Or do you just take a baseline of where you are now, accept that and realize that that's rugby's place?
Ooh, big topic. Yeah, I think that's
asked the question, mate.
One for the listeners to mull over as they carry on their day after listening to this. Right, last question then. What, you are a well-traveled man, been to all places all over the world, covered lots of incredible rugby matches, spoken to a lot of incredible rugby people. What is on your rugby bucket list?
Oh my goodness me. There's a few things. If something happened and I was never able to commentate again, I've done some pretty awesome stuff and I wouldn't have any regrets. But I've never done a Gallagher Premiership game for broadcast, and I'd absolutely love to. I did a men's Six Nations game for ITV. So as I alluded to earlier, audio description, blind and visually impaired supporters. I trained in that for football, and I got to do that for ITV for the England versus Ireland game where Marcus Smith slotted the drop goal.
Wow,
so that was amazing. But I'd love to maybe one day do a men's or women's, or men's and women's. I'd love to do Six Nations games. And I'd love to be a part of a Rugby World Cup. If they happen, amazing. And I'll carry on doing what I do. And if those opportunities come up, then I will grab them with both hands and do the best job that I can. But I've got no regrets. I love talking about rugby whenever, wherever, to whoever. So it's a pretty good life, and I'm very happy to live it.
It sounds it. Well, Dave, thank you so much for coming on the Pirate Rugby Podcast. I hope our listeners and viewers enjoyed it. It's been fantastic for me to learn lots of things from you today, and I'm sure we'll keep in touch going into the future.
I hope so. And Super Rugby fans, send all your hate mail to these guys. All the best.
Yeah, please do. Okay, thank you, everybody. And we'll speak to you next week. Cheers. Sports Social Podcast Network.